Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Women Who Make Things Happen show, featuring your host, Agnes Van Rain, international coach and published best-selling author. The drive and the tips shared by the women she interviews will inspire you to make things happen in your life. And now over to Agnes.
Hello, hello, wherever you are in the world. Today, it is my privilege to be interviewing Dona Darzantas. Very early in her career, Dona was one of the first females within an oil and gas company, a very male-dominated sector. She had to face the prove yourself first concept, that is to say that she had to prove first that she could meet challenges before being compensated equal to her male colleagues. Today, Dona is Senior VP, SD, and HSD at MOL Group, a large international oil and gas company whose headquarters are in Hungary. Welcome, Dona. It's my pleasure to have you. How are you?
Good evening, Agnes. It's always a pleasure to have a discussion with you, and I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Dona and I had the pleasure to, first meet when we were running together the first female event that took place in her company. That was quite an interesting start of a long journey, I hope, for you. So, Dona, tell us a bit more about you. Tell us a bit more, maybe, you know, how you started your career, what you did.
All right. Initially, I went to school to be a medical technologist in a hospital. It didn't seem to be very fulfilling for me. So once I graduated from college with a bachelor's in biology, I did go to work for a small chemical company. And then there was an opening at Amoco Corporation in Chicago. I'm from Chicago originally. And so I joined Amoco Corporation as a technician in the research and development department. And so this is how I actually got into the industry. And from that point on, you know, I was able to work through a number of jobs to learn the business, and then, you know, eventually into the position where I am right now.
So basically, when you started, it was an environment that you did not specifically know, if I understand it well. You learned the environment while you were at it. At that early stage, were there any particular challenges that you have been facing?
Yes, I would say, I started my career about 35 years ago. And so when I moved into this first position, I was the first female in the research and development area, actually in the pilot plant area of the research company. And we had 40 pilot units in one big building. And I was actually one of the first women to run one of these pilot units. And I think one of the struggles that I had early on was there were quite a few old-timers around me who would kind of come up to me every day and say, put their hands on their hips and say, you shouldn't be here, you should go home and have children. And so it was very obvious early on that I was breaking new ground. And and so these guys who eventually became very good friends of mine, really gave me a very difficult time early on. So it was really a struggle from the start. But I think because I was one of the first that they had actually seen working in this part of the business.
So, but was it to the extent that they were that blunt to say it in your face like that, or was it just,
yes,
you know,
they were. Yes,
wow.
Actually, they were. The old timers, and we're talking probably around 1976 is when I started. I'm dating myself here, but when I started in this particular position. And these pilot units, I was running a pilot unit of a process unit at a refinery, and these pilot units are about, you know, 40 feet high and high pressure, high temperature. And even to the extent that when I climbed up on a ladder to actually make adjustments on my unit when it was running, it was a bit scary anyway, but they would actually sit in a kind of a semicircle under my unit and clank their tools and really try to distract me. So I had to stay very, very focused with that group. And the thing that really helped me was I had to mix a barrel of crude with some additives that I would then run through my unit. And the first thing that I think helped me was I was able to actually tip this barrel of crude oil over by myself. I didn't ask any help. And I was actually able to roll it along the floor and mix the feedstock. And I think once they saw that I was really ready to meet the challenges, you know, both physically and mentally, I think that was a turning point for me. So I didn't ask help. I tried to learn things on my own and really show them that I was willing to kind of get my hands dirty to really understand the job and to be part of the team there. So I think that was a turning point for me personally at a very young age, I would say. So
what's interesting in what you're describing is that where today we quite often tend to hear that we should dare asking for help, in your case, you didn't, and that's basically what saved you.
Exactly. The things that they did at that point would be totally unacceptable in the world that we live in now, at least in the U.S. and in Europe. So those were things that probably you would not see at this point in time, especially in those countries where I think diversity is more well accepted at this point.
Mm-hmm. So from there, what did you do?
So from this research and development job, which I held for 4 years, and actually the other thing that I would say that I'm proud of from that particular position is my boss was a great mentor and coach. He let me actually start doing my own research on catalysts and then actually testing these catalysts in this process unit, this pilot unit. And based on his allowing me, you know, trusting and allowing me to go beyond my rigid job description, I was able actually to get 2 U.S. patents based on the work that I did in research many, many years ago. So I'm very proud of that. But actually, in a conversation with this first mentor of mine, he basically said, okay, in the research and development area, you don't have a chemical engineering degree, you don't have a PhD, so it's going to be very difficult for you to move forward in your career here. And so we need to get you into a better place. And he was the one that actually helped me to get into the health, safety, environment area. And from there, I went to, I had an interview, and I went to work for the corporate HSE team, again, for Amoco Corporation early on. And I worked in the team in the headquarters. I then worked as an expert at one of our refineries, actually in Whiting, Indiana. I went back to corporate. I then went out again to do some work in the marketing part of the business. Then kind of back again. So I was really taking on assignments, different assignments every few years. And gradually I worked my way up to a position as head of HSC Regulatory Affairs. I worked in Washington, D.C. for a few years. Then again back to Chicago. Then there was a great opportunity to work in Denver for the upstream, the exploration and production part of the business. So I was in Denver for several years learning that part of the business, and I was a regional manager at that point. Then I moved from there to Atlanta, Georgia, and I was the HSC regional manager for all of the chemical plants, and at that point Amoco had 25 chemical plants in the southeast part of the U.S., so that was a great, great experience. And then I was promoted to the head of all of the regional HSC shared resource operations in North America. At that time, this is around 1999, a merger took place between Amoco Corporation and British Petroleum. And so that changed my career a bit to a different track. From there, I moved to London. I worked in London for several years as the HSC director for the upstream, the E&P part of the business again. And then after that, again, a great opportunity to go back to the U.S. to support the president of the U.S. operations for BP out of Los Angeles, California. And there I was doing all HSC external type work with the government, with NGOs, and really kind of the overall strategy for BP in the U.S. for HSC. And then my last assignment for BP, they asked me to take on another very challenging role and to move to Moscow. And I moved to Moscow for 2 years, working with the downstream part of the business as the vice president of HSC for downstream for a new merger company between a Russian oil company and BP, and it was called TNK-BP. And I did this for several years. And then at that point, some personal issues came into my life. I decided to leave the company. I moved to Greece for a few years, my husband and I started our own business. Then we moved to Chicago. We started another business, actually a trucking company. That wasn't working out very well for us, so we did this for several years, but because of the fuel prices and the nature of the trucking business, this was not really a good fit for me personally and for us as business owners. So we actually closed the company, and then I went to work for a coal mining company in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I was there at Walter Energy for a few years. And again, this was a merged company, a Canadian mining company and a U.S. mining company. And after 2 years, this company culturally was having difficulties, and the nature of the job was changed. And so I wasn't, for me, it was not a good fit from a career standpoint. And so then I was looking for another position, and I did get a call to look at the opportunity in Budapest working for MOL Group. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am. And I probably have left out several positions in the meantime, but I think that gives a kind of a picture of my 35-year long career at this point.
Quite a journey, yes, definitely. So if we, because of a few things I heard in what you're saying that I would like to bounce back on. So the very beginning where you were talking about your boss being your mentor, which is something, again, that we quite often hear and that I always recommend to the women I'm working with in the corporate world is to find a mentor. What would you describe as the particularities that mentor had? What made him special? So he believed in you, very obviously.
So I would say I have had two very strong mentors in my career. The first one was, I would say, without using his name, an Italian gentleman who had been working in the research part of the business for many, many years. And I would say that he was really an excellent leader because he coached and mentored me, but also it wasn't just limited to me. He was a very interactive leader. He really believed in pushing people to realize their career potential, and I saw him do this with, you know, many of the leaders and engineers in the research and development part of the business. And so I think it was not just limited to me, but I think that you know, he was he really took an honest interest in helping me. And I think he and I built a relationship based on trust. He did challenge me. I tried to meet those challenges. And I even remember when he interviewed me for the job and he took me to this area and pointed to this huge process unit and said, "Do you think you could run this?" And I just looked and I said, I think if you're able to answer all the questions that I have about running this unit, I think I can do it. And so he was always there to answer questions. He was always pushing me to the next step. He was always encouraging me to read as much as I could about catalyst development. And when he saw that I was willing to put in a lot of effort in order to go beyond my current job description, I think that also helped him to realize that, you know, it would be worth his time as well as mine to help me move forward. So I actually think that he was basically a wonderful person and also one of the best leaders that, you know, I've actually worked for in my career. So he was the first, and then I did have a second who was also very similar to that, and he was in a higher position, again, very similar, based on, you know, what I was doing and going beyond the normal duties and trying to get involved and to help others succeed. I think based on some of that, he was also willing to make a vested interest in my career. So I think those were the two I think I would never forget what they offered me.
So in both instances, was it their initiative to mentor you, or have you somehow been proactive in that process?
Well, I'm trying to recall. I think that, with the first one, basically I wasn't afraid to ask for help. And I think I even asked for, the mentoring and coaching. I was always in my boss's office asking me, okay, if I want to learn more about actually not just processing the catalyst, but making the catalyst, can you recommend, some reading for me? Or what do you think I should do in order to learn more about the overall process and also to help our team? Because we had a very small team of people who were working on this new catalyst development. So I think I probably initiated it with the first mentor, but I think the second mentor, it was a bit different, and I think he just kind of took me under his wing based on what he saw that I was doing at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so if we now look at how you described your career. So far, this whole notion of being able to, be where opportunities are, see them and act on them, is that something you want to give us more details about?
Yes, actually, I was kind of thinking about, some of the things that maybe contributed to my success. And why I would encourage other leaders, both male and female, to think about this. But, one of the things is really around setting challenging and aggressive goals for yourself. Because I remember many, many years ago that I did set a goal for myself. It wasn't in the first 4 years of my career, but, in probably around the less than 10 years, I set a very challenging goal to be a vice president at a Fortune 500 company. And it was really aggressive. And I was really afraid and I wasn't sure how I could do this, but it was something that I thought, this can be my long-term goal. And here are some of the things that I might need to do in order to, attempt to achieve that goal. The other thing for me was, as I mentioned, around the coaching and mentoring piece. And then the other piece for me was that I always accepted very challenging opportunities. And I accepted challenging opportunities that meant relocations, that meant that I really didn't know the area very well. And I also accepted opportunities that others had really turned down. And so by starting to do this, I think that at least within, you know, Amoco Corporation and then on to BP, when there were higher level, even more challenging positions, I had kind of a track record of accepting those types of opportunities. And so I started to be, you know, recognized for not being afraid to do that type of thing. So I think that it kind of helped me. Okay, you always have to be in the right place at the right time. There is some of that also involved, but also to, you know, have kind of a reputation that you're not afraid to accept challenges. And sometimes it's funny because people will say, well, weren't you afraid, you know, to do that? And every time I've accepted a very challenging opportunity, I have to say that I've always been fearful. I've always been afraid, oh, what if I fail? What if I can't do this correctly? You know, what if I even fail to the point that I lose my job? So I've always been fearful, but I always go kind of into these challenges thinking that, okay, I will not know all the answers, so I need to find out how to get the answers, whether I do that, you know, through peers or through research, my own research, reading, networking, whatever. I, you know, trying to learn as quickly as possible. And also, I think the other thing is not being afraid to ask questions or to admit that, you know, not knowing, you know, everything about a particular position or job. So I would say, you know, this whole concept of, you know, challenge and accepting challenges, even though we're a bit wary of where that might lead us, you know, is also something that I think is pretty important, both for men and women.
So the good thing is that you've transitioned yourself marvelously in the question I was going to ask you, is how you were dealing with this fear. but that's perfect. So one of the key answers, if I'm hearing you well, is action, in fact, huh? In addressing fear.
Right, absolutely. Actually, to admit that you're, you know, early on, I tried not to admit that to anyone. But as I kind of grew a bit older and wiser, and as people, young people talk to me now, I have to say, and even to my own family, I say, hey, I am very afraid. You know, when I went to Russia, I really didn't speak the language. I had to work with interpreters around the clock. I was very, very afraid in that particular situation because I felt that I was out of my element. But I had to, you know, somehow gain the support of friends and family, acknowledge that fear because I think that also helped me, and then try to do, you know, kind of small steps to kind of get past that. You know, small steps, one step at a time, you know, and kind of deal with things as they kind of came up. So I think it's true. I think you have to kind of acknowledge that, you know, and I would even say some of the best leaders in the world, even those that we have in place now in our governments, you know, in some of our universities, you know, in the corporate setting, I would say that, you know, in some cases, if you were to ask them, I would say that many of them would say that they weren't always so comfortable in going into these positions and you know, had to overcome some of their fearfulness around that as well.
Yeah, we're human beings, huh?
Yes,
no Wonder
absolutely.
Man or Superman or Wonder
absolutely.
Woman.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So. Would you say that you've been facing a lot of moments of doubt, or have you never doubted that those were the right decisions?
I have had moments of doubt as well. And those types of decisions, really, the doubtful types of decisions were really not so much from the job standpoint, but more from the personal piece. Because I can even talk about a situation that I got caught up in, you know, early on. I was married for 10 years to my first husband, who was a wonderful person, but really did not want to make a lot of moves. And I think I mentioned to you this opportunity that I had to move to Denver, Colorado, and to take on a big assignment as a regional leader. And I actually had quite a long discussion with my husband about this position. And I said, okay, if you're not willing to do this, then I will, you know, I will stop this. But he said, oh, no, I think I would be willing to leave for the Chicago area. And there were several people who were, again, high-level people who wanted me to move to the position, who were doing all they could do to make it work. And, in fact, one of the leaders of the upstream part of the business went out of his way to get my husband two or three job opportunities if we were to make the move. So my husband consented. We went to the interview, and then based on the interview, I came back, and my husband basically said, and it was kind of already a done deal, but then he basically said that he was not willing to move. So it put me in a very, very difficult situation. I actually ended up turning down the job the first time it was offered to me. I ended up going back to do that position at a later date. But the first time, I turned it down. And because of that, it created a problem for me, especially with one of my mentors who had really gone out of his way, gone out on a limb to make this work for me. And actually, this particular leader was so upset with me that it was almost a year before we were able to really get on good terms again. And so I was really very doubtful about a number of things, you know, really my future career, but also the whole situation with my husband. What I ended up doing is my husband and I did part ways, and I think it probably was this was kind of generated to a certain extent from this particular opportunity. And we did end up getting a divorce, and then I was really on my own for a number of years. So it was really a very difficult situation. But so you do have doubts about, you know, can the family move? Is it a good situation for the relationship? Will it really help in my career? You know, so there are those sorts of things that go into play. But most of the situation around the doubt is really more on the personal life balance type side, I think, for me personally.
Have you experienced any other type of challenges, I would say, that have affected your personal life, or given also the fact that you were really in a male world, were there any particular things that you would like to mention?
Well, I would say, you know, I would also say with my first husband, it was, I think he didn't really want children. And with my career, it was something that wasn't such a priority for me at that time in my life. And so, you know, so this was... you know, was one of those things. But, you know, it was a challenge to, you know, kind of sometimes make these decisions. I have to say that it was easier in some regards when I was on my own. So I was not married for 12 years in my career. And I think it was at kind of a critical point because I was already into leadership positions, and I was then able to move more quickly and take on, as I mentioned, many of these other opportunities that were challenges for me.
Yeah.
However, the thing that I would say is, you know, with regard to work-life balance, you know, I also would say I got into a habit that's very bad, and I would not recommend this for anyone, and that is, you know, really getting into a habit of working in the evenings, working on weekends, not allowing myself really personal time. But the other types of opportunities I would say that came up were also around, you know, when I made the decision to leave British Petroleum. I had been working already for 29 years with no break in time. And my father-in-law was very ill in Greece. My mother was not doing very well in Chicago. I decided to leave the industry for a few years. And it was also a struggle for me to do something outside of the corporate world. And so when we moved to Greece, I became a restaurant owner, which was very different for me and very different types of skills. And then we ended up moving back to Chicago after that, and we started our own trucking company. And again, this was something that I would say both of those opportunities actually became failures for both my husband and myself. But we feel kind of good that we gave it a try, and we discovered that we were not good at this. And for me, what's very exciting for me is really to work with teams and to work with other people. And those positions that we did as independent business owners were, I would say, more isolating for me after being in a corporate culture where I was dealing with numerous teams and building high-performance teams and all of this. So so for me, I was very happy to get back to the corporate setting.
Well, in any event, no regrets. You tried.
No regrets, actually. I actually say that I've had a great opportunity to be working in a very exciting industry. The oil and gas industry is probably one of the most exciting, you know, in the world. And you know, I don't really have very many regrets. I mean, I tried things, okay, I failed, but I also learned some things along the way, which I think overall have made me a better person. And also, that's very important to me as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Donna, it's amazing. Time flies. It's I should have had a double length interview with you. So
that's okay.
We only have 10 minutes left. What I would like to hear from you is, so if you look back at your career, and you already gave us quite a few tips, but if you look back at your career, and if you would want to give any specific set of recommendations to women who are climbing the ladder in the corporate world, what would you say?
Well, I would say, I would have to say now, I think the world has changed. Yeah, when I was trying to do kind of the climbing versus at this point in time. But I still think some things continue to stand. And I would say, you know, this is something that you even mentioned, you know, on your website, is, you know, really around proving yourself. You know, I think it's very important to, when you get into a new position, really to gain the trust of your colleagues, of your team, very quickly. And something that I remember from my own experience is to not make promises if you cannot really meet those promises. So don't, if you're working with your team, if you're working with either internal or external customers, don't promise things that you really can't deliver, because that breaks down trust very quickly. So always keep that in mind. And even if it's something as small as being on time for a meeting, making sure you're attending meetings. So from the small things to even the bigger things, it's very important to pay attention to that. I think the other thing that I would also say is to be very empathetic, and because every person within your team, colleagues that you work with, and even leaders, every person is facing their own battles in life. And I think it's important to really recognize that each of the people that we're interacting with are fighting their own personal battles, whether it's a divorce, whether it's a sickness, whether it's, you know, a child who is, you know, has special needs. And so you don't really know what's behind the person that you see in the day-to-day at work. But I think you should assume that everybody has these battles that they're dealing with. And I think that we should all be empathetic about giving people, you know, the benefit of the doubt, giving people, support when they really need that support. So I think those things are very, very important. Relationships are also very important. And to treat every person with respect. So it doesn't matter if that person is the janitor, a secretary, an expert, a leader. I think respect for the individual, as I said, is really, really important. And so for me, the more that you're open and respectful of people, the more so they will be back to you. So those are a few things. And then I think I was mentioning some of them before. I think also if you have the opportunity to help someone in their career, it's very fulfilling. However you can help, it doesn't have to be as a formal mentor or coach, but that also is a very rewarding thing to do, and also to set really good challenges for yourself. I mean, I remember, this is a funny story. When I first started in the oil industry, I was so excited because my salary at that time was really nice compared to what I had been making in college. And I remember I set my first goal, and then I said, okay, when I make this particular salary, I'm going to buy myself a Corvette, a car. And this was very crazy. So after a few years, I achieved that goal, and then I was kind of scratching my head and saying, this was really not a good goal because I don't even really want this car. And even though I've made this, you know, money, I still can't afford the car. So I set some kind of crazy goals for myself early on, but then, you know, was able to realign, you know, what I really wanted to do in the long term, which helped me to set, you know, better short-term goals. The other thing I would say to people is, okay, in my time, I was able to stay with one company for a very long time and kind of work my way up the ladder. I'm not sure that is the best advice to give someone nowadays, because I have even had friends that have achieved as much, but basically going from company to company. And I think if you decide that's the way to go, that as you move, you know, from company to company, don't do it too frequently. But when you do, make sure it's a substantial, career step for you, because I think then you can realize your longer term goals, you know, also. The other thing would be, you know, really try to you know, balance your life, because I think it's really very important. And I will give an example of the U.S. versus the EU in this case. I think in the European Union, I think the work-life balance is much better than I would say in the U.S. And I think many of the social structures promote that. I can even talk from personal experience. My niece had a daughter not too long ago, and she was back to work within 2 months. And those types of things you don't see so much in Europe. I think there's better support for new mothers, and I think it's really better in the long term that mothers are able to stay with their young children a bit longer to get a good start in life. So I think that there's those types of things also that, you know, have to be taken into account. So I'm probably, Anya, talking too much, so I think I'll stop and let you ask
some additional questions.
Some additional questions, maybe.
This is really interesting. This is all very good advice, and I would love to hear even more about it. But we only have a few minutes left. I was going to ask you if there was anything particular now that you, at this stage of your career, if in a nutshell you could summarize where you're at now. Is there any particular thing you would want to mention, knowing we have only 3 minutes left?
Okay, so for me, I've basically attained my career goals at this point. If another opportunity comes by that's a bit different and a bit bigger, I would think about it, obviously. But I would say that what is exciting to me and what makes me feel good about myself has changed. And in the early days, it was about making money, having a great job title, kind of all the trimmings. So it was, you know, I wanted to really succeed in, you know, the biggest sense of the word. After my 35 years of experience at this point, the monetary compensation is great, but that's not what drives me anymore from day to day. The thing now for me really is around helping other people succeed. When I can actually help someone to move into a new job that they've really wanted to do, move them directionally towards, you know, meeting their career goals, help them, you know, to be a better person and to accomplish what they want to do, this is really a huge driver for me now. And it's because I think I can make a significant change in someone's life by being a good coach and mentor. So that has become more and more important for me. And it's really what makes me get up in the morning. So whether it's, a fellow leader, a male or a female, the team working for me, you know, it's really very important to me. And I think the other thing is also building good teams, because it's very difficult to build a high performance team and a very good team. It takes a lot of time and patience, but it's very well worth the effort. And for me, those are the things that give me, it's really the greatest reward if I can do that type of thing at this point in my career. So I think, as I said, it changed from kind of the standard kind of reward type things to something even deeper and more meaningful for me personally, you know. So I would say that's really where I am at this point.
Donna, thank you so much. I have really, really enjoyed this interview. As I said earlier on, I would have wanted it to last much longer. Maybe I will ask a comeback at some point.
That would be wonderful. I would be happy to do that.
So you and I will have other opportunities to meet again. But so the recording of this interview will be made available on my website, www.successfulwomenacademy.com. And, well, Donna, I will send it to you, of course. The next will be on, I think it's the 2nd, if I remember well, on the 2nd of February. And you will hear more about that. So, again, Donna, thank you so much. Enjoy your evening. And for the listeners, your day or night or evening, depending on where you are in the world. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Okay, thank you, Agnes. Bye-bye.